Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow, it's clouds, illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all.
Hey, this is Steve Balton. You're here on My Turning Point, where this week, really fun conversation with one of the great vocalists in the world, Josh Groban. Really fun to talk with him about his new album, Harmony, the songs he covers on there from the likes of Joni Mitchell, Roberta Flack, and more. And we also touch upon his charity foundation as an encyclopedic knowledge of vocalists from Joni Mitchell, again, and Tony Bennett to the Elvises, Costello, and Presley. Hope you enjoy this one as much as we did.
I mean, it's such a beautiful record. I also love your song choices, which we'll come on to some of those.
Thank you.
But so when you do these, it's interesting because I wonder if those tie in with your turning point and sort of these classic songs that, you know, I mean, you go back to first time ever I saw your face, Roberta Flack version. It's like, I don't know how old you were when you first heard that, but it's an incredible song.
It's an extraordinary song. It's one of the great vocal challenges out there, I think, because of its nuance, because of its, you know, you have to paint with every color of the rainbow to sing that song. And it's that definitely falls into the category of very scared to tackle it. Very glad that I did. But yeah, I do love it. I was raised in a musical family. My dad, you know, played trumpet through college before he went into business. My mom was an art teacher before she had my brother and I. And so even though they weren't in it professionally anymore, we were raised with a lot of great vocalists in the house and had a lot of great songs like that playing in the house. And so you don't realize how much that influences you until you're an adult and you actually have the chance to curate your own songs and music. And you can say, oh, I remember that when I was, you know, 5 years old, or whatever it was, yeah.
So does that tie in with your, or what's your turning point? Was it growing up in the musical house, or?
My turning point, I think my turning point was the first time I ever saw a theater. I think that growing up in LA, it was very lucky that we had every show would come through the Music Center or the Pantages or wherever it was. And I was fortunate to have parents that when I was 8 or 9 years old, allowed me to go see a show and be moved by live theater and musical theater and concerts. We'd go out. And so that was my turning point as far as how much I knew music meant to me as a language. My turning point and why I have an arts education foundation now, because I was in a privileged position to be able to have access to the arts at that age when a lot of kids do not. But my turning point that I could actually sing came from a teacher, came from a music teacher that I had named Richard Barrett. And he pulled me out from the back of a choir and he gave me my first ever solo ever. And I was shy. I knew I could sing a little bit, but I was not an extrovert by any stretch of the imagination. And so to have it as an assignment and to have that opportunity to face that fear and to then get applause for it and to make my parents proud and to feel like people came up to me the next day and said, hey, that was great. I from that point on felt like my whole scope for the hope for my future just opened up, that there was something that I could do that I was okay at that would be a great joy for me.
All right, so multiple questions on that. The first one being, obviously, do you remember the first show you saw or the favorite show that you saw when you first started going to the theater?
So the first show I saw was 9 years old. It was Cats. And it was my first introduction to the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber. And, you know, for a kid, when they got the tunnels and the stage and they're rolling, you know, they're going all over the audience. And you know, that show, for all of the, you know, for all of the flack the movie got, you know, has a pretty spectacular score. His composition on that is pretty amazing. And so for a 9-year-old that had an inclination towards interesting and complicated music, hearing the chord structure of that score was the first thing that set me off. And then I went and I started to get a deep dive into Sondheim. And then I started to, even if something wasn't coming to town, I would have the VHS copy of Sunday in the Park with George, and I would watch, you know, Angela Lansbury and George Hearn and Sweeney Todd, and I would listen to this, the, you know, Company. And then it, then I started to realize that I started to listen to more cast recordings, just how much all of the ingredients of theater and musical theater really vibed with me. And the idea of, because I loved acting and I knew I wanted to be an actor, but I didn't know how to incorporate that with my singing. And the idea that it could all wrap around to tell a story in a complicated way that didn't take the audience's intelligence for granted was incredible. And so, you know, that led to eventually getting my first lead role in junior year of high school. And then I didn't turn back.
And how old were you when you had the first solo, that turning point moment as a singer?
I was 13.
Okay.
I was 13 with a voice that had not yet changed. So, you know, that was terrifying for me, you know, to be going out and singing, you know, Swonderful, the Gershwin song, you know, you should care for me, you know, and I just thought it was going to be, that I was going to be bullied for the rest of my existence. And the bully came up to me the next day. The guy that had always been giving me shit my entire schooling life came up to me and says, "Hey man, that was really good, bro. That was good." So I don't know. Felt like if I could win that guy over, that was my biggest defense.
Nice. So it's interesting because then when it's funny, so, you know, you were kind of hesitant to, or not hesitant to do it, but, you know, you thought you were going to take shit from it. And then it ended up being the thing that sort of won people. So at that point too, do you start to realize then the power of music and the fact that you also like have a talent that, you know, does impress people? Because look, every artist, as I talk about all the time, every artist is their own worst critic, you know? Every sure. artist is like, oh yeah, no, or whatever. And then when other people start to respond to it, then you can sort of get perspective and be like, oh, okay, maybe I see what they're responding to.
You think you need that perspective. You need that back and forth of an audience reaction, which is the kind of thing you don't get when you're just trapped in your own head. You're trapped in your bedroom. You're trapped, you know, wondering how to make your mark on the world. I mean, at that age, I was, you know, also dealing with a great amount of anxiety. I was dealing with, I think, not a small amount of depression. My grades were, you know, all over the map because I hadn't been diagnosed with ADD at that point. And I didn't know how to connect. I didn't know how to feel at peace with myself at that time in my life. I think that's shared by a lot of young people in junior high school and high school, where, and especially, thank goodness I didn't have social media back then. Somebody wanted to bully me, they had to get up in my face and throw me against the locker, you know, they had to do it for real. I think that it definitely unleashed in me all kinds of things. One, it gave me confidence in myself, which, of course, you plant that seed and all of a sudden a lot of other things start to show up. It also improved my grades. Once I started to use music as a tool to learn and had the idea that I could come home from school, play the piano, sing a few songs, and then go do my homework, it put me into a focus mode that was different than just dealing with the ordinary stress. It's why I have an arts foundation called Find Your Light. We are not necessarily talent seekers. That's a bonus if we find the next, you know, star. But the main purpose of it is to make sure the programs that utilize that, what that did for me, the arts in schools, to make sure that kids that also need that to finish their picture for themselves, that they get that, because it was an absolute lifesaver for me. And then the fact that I had a fork in the road and had an opportunity to do it professionally, and then on top of that, to do it on a level where there could actually be a fair amount of success attached to it, that was a complete surprise to me.
Now, I'm interested, how often do you get to actually interact with the kids personally? Because I taught Grammy Camp for 13 or 14 years.
Oh, great.
And I did a program here in LA called Young Storytellers, where you work with a kid.
Yeah.
And you actually develop, are you familiar with it?
I am, yeah.
So I've done both. So, and it is, you know, among the most gratifying things that you can do. So for you, how often do you get to actually interact with the kids directly?
As often as I can. And when you're on tour and you have days off in a city where you have a program that is a grant recipient, it's always fun to go and do that. It's the best reminder you can have for just how relatively easy it is to change a life. When we were talking about paintbrushes and instruments and teachers, you know, we're not talking about defense budget here. We're talking about, you know, a little bit goes a very, very long way. And then when you get to go and you get to talk to the principals, the most amount of time I've spent at any given program is when I was an ambassador for Michelle Obama's Turnaround Arts program. And so the school that I kind of took on was Chalmers School of Excellence in the south side of Chicago. And just as an example, hearing the testimonials from the teachers and from the students about coming from environments, home life, neighborhoods where they are not getting the enrichment that they deserve as far as leadership skills, self-confidence, learning about themselves and the world. And the main one is self-expression. When kids that are coming from difficult neighborhoods, difficult home lives, then aren't able to get that out of their systems and express themselves in a way that's healthy, they're going to start to express themselves in ways that are really unhealthy. And so what we would find at schools like that is that incorporating the arts as a tool took kids that were in the back of the class, you know, messing around, didn't care. All of a sudden, they're raising their hands in the front and they're helping teach the class when the teacher's out of the thing. Kids that were really had behavioral problems, that were acting out in sometimes violent ways, are now needed to be the lead in a play. You know, they were choosing the wrong ways to express the pain that they were experiencing in other parts of their lives. And so you can read it on paper, you can read stats all day long, and it's fun when the math is on your side in that regard, where the arts in schools are really helping to shape graduation rates and whatnot. But when you get to go in person, like you said, you see the light bulb. We call it find your light, because you actually can see a change behind the eyes. And it's exciting. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Yeah, no, the personal interaction is so different. And, you know, let's tie it in with harmony, because I would imagine that, you know, some of these songs, as you mentioned, you know, like First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, or Both Sides Now, which is funny because, I mean, that's just one of those songs that it's like, I think everybody comes back to again and again and again. And it's like, you know, and it's
even Joni. I mean, my favorite version of hers is the one she reinterpreted with that beautiful Vince Mendoza arrangement. So yeah, it's the kind of song that whatever time you're at in your life, there's a new gem of a meaning to find in that.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I mean, I find that very interesting because I think that the best songs are songs that travel with you. And what I mean by that is they're songs that, you know, when you're 10 years old, when you're 5 years old, when you're 40 years old, they take on new meanings for you. And obviously, like, you can hear a song like Both Sides Now as a kid and you're like, oh, it's a beautiful song. But then only later on, when you get older, can you actually interpret the meaning or understanding? So it's interesting for you. How has that song changed for you as you've gotten older? Or how have you appreciated? Again, you can listen to it and think it's a beautiful song, but until you have the experience, you can't really understand the brilliance of it. So how has that song changed for you?
I think that song probably has a huge, new, unexpected meaning for a lot of people in the world right now. I didn't sing it for the longest time, wanted to. I've had songs on my bucket list forever. As a vocalist, you just have your wish list of songs you can't wait to tackle. That, you know, I think with experience, you start to realize, well, I'm not quite there yet to interpret it. I'm still a listener of this song. I'm not a singer of this song yet. And I think that you gotta pick when it feels right to interpret and honor a song that's been such a soundtrack to our lives and such a classic. That song, is, as you mentioned, when I was talking to Sarah Bareilles, who sang it so beautifully with me on there. We were talking about the same thing. We were just talking about, you know, just what we've seen from this and what we've both been going through, and I brought up the song and just said, does this feel right, you know, and would you do it with me? And she said yes and yes. And sometimes you can't really fully grasp how much it means to you in the moment until you actually start to vocalize it and start to sing it. And that session with her was among the most special that I've ever done, because of all of that around it. But I feel that way about a lot of songs that I even sang on my first couple of albums, where I had to, you know, sing about very deep, very heady emotions and life experiences at all of, you know, 18. And so there was a lot of kind of approximating that I was doing at that age that I knew was connecting with a lot of people that were a great deal older that had lived through those things, that I hadn't quite gone through those deep experiences of love and loss and the joys of life and the tragedies of life. And so I enjoy singing those songs more now than I did then because of that extra 20 years experience. But a lot of the songs on this album were songs that I've wanted to do for a while, or the fans have asked me to do for a while, and just didn't feel like they were right. There were songs probably that were lined up that we were thinking of demoing before the quarantine started that maybe were shelved for another time. There were songs that came about from all of this that we were going through as right for this album when they may not have been necessarily as right, you know, a year ago.
That's interesting. Are there, and you know, the other thing about it too, it's funny. I remember talking about this with Brian Ferry when he did an album of all Dylan covers. And as we talked about, you can love a song, but it doesn't mean that it's a right song for you. So at what point do you determine that, okay, now this is the right time to try this? Or I'm always curious about this as well. Are there songs of yours that are still, or songs, I should say, that are just, you know, they remain sacred cows? It's like, they're so favorites, or they're so perfect. You're like, I love this song. This is one of my favorite songs, but I'm just not going to try it, or it doesn't feel right for me at this point.
I'm sure there are a few of those. You learn restraint, I think, comes with experience a little bit, you know, that kind of, there have been a lot of songs in the past where I just sang them because I wanted to sing them and hope for the best. I think so much of it, I don't mean to dodge the answer, but I think so much of it comes down to that unexpected thing that happens when you actually start to sing it. You can plan so much on paper, both songs that you couldn't wait to sing for 20 years and also songs that somebody might bring into the studio that day that they think might be right for you or right for right now. And you know, my first instinct is, you know, my own worst self-critic and cynic is to roll my eyes. I can't do that. Or come on, that's really. And then you start to sing it and you start to realize just how meaningful it is, or how much unexpected stuff you can put on it that you didn't expect to do. Singing is so, you know, there's only so much you can plan. You got to make noise and see if it feels right. And with experience, that's when I've really started to learn when to listen to the goosebumps and when to listen to the red flags. There was a time in the past where if there was something I wanted to do, even if the red flag was raised in my own head, I plowed through anyway. And you start to listen more as you get a little wiser to that instinct. But I'm sure there are songs that I wouldn't dare go after. At least maybe ever, but maybe at least for a little while.
Well, it's interesting too. I mean, when you do a song like It's Now or Never, you know, I mean, you know,
that would not have been on as much as I love Elvis and love that song. I would not have expected myself to do it. Sometimes you wind up doing something for a, you know, an event or a TV show or a charity or something like that. You get asked to do a song and you say, well, sure, why not? Because it's in the context of something else. So why not just celebrate the song? It's so interesting because the only reason I wound up recording Now or Never is because I was so excited to just celebrate Elvis. I was so excited to just celebrate his voice. And we did it for an NBC special, celebrating his Saturday night concert. And And so I didn't expect to get a reaction from it. I just was excited to sing it and celebrate his range. And then after I sang it, I went, well, there's something really kind of fun about that. And it actually wasn't so square pegging around holes I thought it would be. And it made me realize that so many of the popular singers, especially from that day, they actually had rather classical voices when they wanted to turn that on. Elvis included. So it wound up going from a song that I never thought I'd hear myself singing to one that actually I felt wasn't so out of place and was a lot of fun. Steve Jordan, who's just one of the most amazing musicians and producers, we've had a lot of fun both on the last album and on this album. And when I told him about Now or Never, he's like, Josh, I have loved that song my whole life. We got to try it. And he got some of the best musicians on the planet to just jam on that. And it was so much fun to sing.
Well, it's interesting what you say about the classical voices and, you know, those, you know, how a lot of those musicians back then, I mean, I'm curious, are there, you know, I guess, you know, just as a fan of your voice, who are those people for you? Because obviously, you know, so many people have, you know, commented on your singing. When you think back to those voices that just blow your mind, who are the one or two that are just like, okay.
Well, I mean, there are.
When I say one or two, I mean the first one or two that come to mind, because I'm sure there are several.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of two categories. There were the interpreter, the great vocalists. Or the I became a baritone in my adult life, but as a kid, I also loved baritones, and I would listen to people like Robert Merrill and Mel Torme, and you know, I would just kind of dive into the great musical theater baritones, John Raitt. And then there were the songwriters that had unique voices that I could pick out of any crowd, like Paul Simon and Peter Gabriel and David Bowie and Annie Lennox, and you know, people that I just, you know, I loved Bjork growing up because I just felt like what she was doing with her voice was so different than what I was being trained to do. You know, she was just wild as wild can be with her expression. And so, you know, I listened to the technically perfect voices to kind of strive for that. And then I also listened to those voices that had a natural fringe and nuance and wildness to them, to learn about how there are many ways to shape a voice. And so, yeah, I had a lot of great influences growing up. And then you wake up one day and you realize you have the voice that you've been given. You can't really, you can adapt it, you can shape it, you can interpret, but my voice is my voice. And so there have been times where I've wanted to sing like someone else, I can't. And there have been times where I've been able to use all those inspirations to actually shape the way I choose a song or interpret a song in my own world that made it different than I would have done otherwise. So you try and take from a little bit from everything.
Yeah, of course. And it's funny though what you say about the, you know, sort of recognizing your voice and also the difference between the baritones and the songwriters. Cause it's funny, like one of the songs you covered on the record that I absolutely love is She, and I'm huge Elvis Costello fan.
Yeah, me
but
too.
It's funny because, you know, if you listen to the early Elvis stuff, like Pump It Up or What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, you know, and then you go back and it's like, wait, is this the same dude?
Yeah. Voices change, you know, and that's one of my favorite things to do. Elvis is a perfect example. And Joni's another one. I mean, so many of my favorite singers, Neil Young, I mean, Neil's voice has actually stayed pretty pristine, I have to say, actually, but, you know, it's my voice will continue to change. I feel like there's more than I can do with it now, and there's more that I've leaned into certain natural qualities or aspects of my voice that I wasn't leaning into as much earlier on. You know, our voices are in our bodies. Our bodies go through all different kinds of things in our lives, and it's all connected. Our minds and our voices are all connected. Life experience changes the way we choose to use our vocal cords. It's the incredible thing and the frustrating thing about being a vocalist is that everything that happens in your life, everything that you put into your body, every moment of joy or grief, or you know, whether you work out your voice or decide to leave it for 10 years, it all affects how it's going to sound. It all affects how it's going to age and interpret in the future. You know, it's different in that way than, you know, another instrument that you can polish and put in a case and it stood the test of 1,000 years and it's going to have that same quality. Your voice is what you choose to do with it over the next many years. And so, I do love for my favorite artists that have been around for 40, 50 years, hearing those changes as well. And then there are the people like Tony Bennett, where somebody into their 90s, you hear the striving to continue learning and getting better, and the fearlessness to go up to that range and to interpret the same way, you know, in many ways with the same freshness and for his voice and for his songs as when he was in his 20s and 30s. It's all different. I don't know what side of the coin I'm going to fall on if I ever luckily make it to that age, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because, I mean, you know, when you look at that, you know, you mentioned Tony Bennett, there's Elvis Costello, Neil Young is another example of an artist who, you know, I mean, the artists that I tend to admire are those that evolve consistently. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know. I mean, Neil, you know, has had his hits and his, you know, I'd say 95% hits and 5% misses. But, you know, it's always interesting and it's always fascinating. So for you, as you start to think of stuff that you want to do going forward, are there people that, you know, you say you don't know which side of the coin you'll fall on, but are there people that you look at and really admire as artists and the way that they've evolved and the way that they consistently challenge themselves that you think about, oh, this is where I want to continue to go as a vocalist and as an artist?
I think that you always want to, you know, it's interesting because sometimes that exploration and that desire to break into new zones and expand and scare yourself can also be quite alienating for those that like a certain thing. And so I think that the artists that have found the balance of wanting to grow, wanting to expand, and wanting to do it in service of making what their audience came for even more rich and even more nuanced is always the goal. When it comes from the point of rebellion, sometimes that can be, you know, there can be a lot of cutting off your nose to spite your face as far as that goes. Look, there's a lot of experimenting to be done where you know it's going to be 90% failure that you can do in private. I play around all the time on my GarageBand and all that stuff, and that stuff will never see the light of day because it probably shouldn't. But you know, when I think of someone like Paul Simon, for instance, you know, the way he was able to transition from the Simon and Garfunkel days into Ryman Simon, into all of a sudden being inspired by all these different rhythms and sounds and from his travels, and then presenting it in a way of growth and education and wanting his audience to grow and educate themselves with him, was, you know, that's the goal, is you want to bring people along for the ride always. And I'm a believer that, especially when there's a lot of pressure in the music business to just stay the course and never drift out of what can feel like a very narrow lane, I also believe that it's important not to take your audience's intelligence for granted, and that people generally like to be surprised by things they didn't know they wanted and like to feel like they are growing along with you. So that's always the goal. That's always the goal. And the great vocalists have found ways of doing that. 5% fail rate is something always to strive for. The failures, you know, inform the hits. You can't have peaks without valleys. And there is no such thing as a perfect path.
No, of course not. It's interesting. Okay. I mean, my favorite artist of all time is Bruce Springsteen, but I fucking hate the song Cover Me. Can't stand that song. You know, every other song I love, but that song, every time it comes on, I'm just like, ugh. But all right, I know we got to wrap up. So two questions. One, I have to ask you about I Can't Make You Love Me, because that's just one of the most perfect songs ever written. And it's funny because I got to interview Don Was, and we were talking about it. You know, we were talking about, you know, when you're in a studio, oftentimes you have no idea if something is going to resonate. You have no idea how people are going to respond to it. And he's like, but when we were in the studio that day and watching the crew crying, he's like, I knew that it was,
maybe a slight indication that you may have something special there. Yeah. I love that. I love that song. It's one of the most beautiful, heart-wrenching, you know, timeless. I mean, it's the kind of song that could be done in so many different ways and still mean exactly the same powerful thing. And, you know, talking about John Raitt, you know, what a family of great vocalists. That's a song that's been on my wish list for a while. And I think I even recorded a kind of a piano vocal demo of it when I was working with Rick Rubin, but it didn't feel, it felt like now was the, I don't know, just sometimes you get an arrangement and it makes you feel like it's okay. You know, the unsung heroes are the arrangers, the orchestrators, that sometimes as a vocalist, we can be a little gun shy about tackling something we've loved so long. And then you start to see the blueprint of how an arranger wants to encapsulate it. And that can be sometimes the boost you need to say, okay, I can honor this now. I feel like I can do this now. And so, Vince Mendoza, again, just somebody who always gets it right.
All right, cool. Last question, because I know we got to wrap up, but it's funny because during quarantine, obviously everybody goes through different habits and different things. And I've been rewatching a lot of shows, and my favorite person of all time is Robin Williams. So I went back and rewatched all of Crazy Ones,
yeah.
You know, bought it on Amazon. So I mean, yeah. Such a great, wonderful thing. So of course it makes me think, what's going on with your acting? Anything coming up, anything that you're excited about? And it's fun for you as an artist, how much fun is it to get to do something where you get to show a completely different side of yourself?
It's so fun. It's the best kind of being, it's the best kind of fear, because, you know, I've been so lucky in my music world. So much of it, the fear of the music thing was just getting thrown into such a big world very, very quickly. I had to be on a pedestal from kind of moment one. In the acting and comedy realm, I kind of feel like I've been able to slowly kind of work my way up a little bit. And, you know, obviously culminating in moments like to be able to share, you know, a couple days on set with someone like Robin Williams was, you just try to be a sponge. You just try to sit back and just observe and watch the process, you know, and learn as much as you can from somebody that you've admired, you know, your entire life, and see how they, you know, approach a line or a scene, or how they improvise, when they improvise. Robin was, you know, I don't need to tell you, was just the quickest gun in the West. There was nobody that could match him on that set. And, you know, and so you don't try, you just try to, whatever way his boat is going, you just try to drift in the wake and catch on. And so, you know, it's moments like those have been just so, rewarding, so challenging, so fun. I've been on a lot of TV shows that I love, which has been just as an actor, which has been a really unexpected kind of twist to this already hard to define career that I've had. And I'd love to do more. You know, I've always appreciated the opportunities to do that, to explore, to use, you know, comedy is rhythm just like music. And before I was doing musical theater, I loved improv and loved kind of the excitement and the fear and the tightrope walk of like having to think of a funny beat or a funny thing to say. And so it's something I love. Thanks for watching those. Those are, you know, my connection with, he created Ally McBeal too, David E. Kelly, who created the Crazy Ones, goes back to Ally McBeal when he first hired me to play a agoraphobic young kid, and all those years later, to work with him with Robin was a blast.
It's so funny though when you say that, like, you try and be a sponge, but you know, it's interesting how much are you actually able to pick up, because there's just simply no one like him. It's like if you're a musician trying to, you know, improv with John Coltrane or, you know, Miles Davis, I mean, it's just like there's only, you know, at some point, you know, you can observe, but there's only so much that you can do because, you know, he's just on a different level.
Yeah, there's I think that And comedy is not my profession. So for me, just coming up as a, you know, being on stage as a fanboy, having lines with the guy and then having a musical moment where we could just kind of riff and have fun. At least I had a piano in front of me. So I felt a little bit like I could kind of be in my world a little bit with him. But even in music, I mean, I'll never forget. I did a duet with Aretha Franklin for a Nelson Mandela tribute. And that was another situation where you don't try to match. You don't try to go toe to toe. You just put your microphone up when she puts hers down, and then you fill the space in between. And you know, I just feel very lucky that the people that I've idolized in comedy and music, otherwise, that I've been able to work with, to be able to collaborate with, I just can't believe my good fortune. It's all been you know, as scary as it's been, rewarding and educational. And you know, and you carry that with you. And I don't know who those people were for them when they were my age, you know, but, you know, to have the opportunity to do that is something that has made this, I think, the most exciting and the most rewarding.
All right, I promise, last question. I know, Luke, we got to wrap up, but I'm curious. Now, two TV shows right now that you would love to guest star in, that you would just think of, like, you know, the shows right now, since you say you've gotten to do a lot of TV shows, and then I'm going to ask you as well, the one movie that you would love to do a remake of.
Oh, man. That's a really good question. Let's see. I would love to play a teacher on Pen 15. I think it's one of the funniest shows out there. I would love to just be a waiter on Chef's Table. that's not really a role. I've been starting to watch The West Wing for the first time from season one. And I've been so blown away with how that holds up. If there was ever another reunion, I know they just did one. Would love to be in that. I know Lin-Manuel and I share that. God, I mean, there are some. Jeez, I mean, I've probably watched everything there is now on every streaming service, and it's all become a bit of a blur, to be honest. But yeah.
And what about one movie you'd want to be in a remake of? Because obviously the movie's already been made, but, you know, just those one or two favorite movies that you would love to.
The Jerk. I would say, one of the great.
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing. Nobody wants to see that.
Sorry, back.
Trust me, nobody wants to see that. Another movie I'd want to see remade. I love Terry Gilliam. I love Monty Python. I love those old films. Amadeus was one of my favorites. I feel like I could do a great Scottish accent, maybe Braveheart. Every guy wants to be in Braveheart.
Interesting. So that was a big leap from Monty Python to Amadeus and Braveheart.
Just listing my favorite movies now. I don't actually see a place for me in them. I don't know. Servant number three.
Fair enough. All excellent choices. But it's funny because when you say Terry Gilliam, then immediately I go to Fisher King.
Oh, Fisher King would be. Oh yeah, sure. There you go. Perfect. Set me up. Yeah, Fisher King.
Oh my God, I love that movie. I want to rewatch that movie.
Cool. Incredible. All right, Josh. What do you want to add? We didn't talk about, because I know that we covered a lot.
Nothing. You asked such great questions. It was you covered it. You covered it. You even let me talk about my foundation, so I appreciate it.
Oh no, the foundation is, like, I mean, like I said, that's my favorite stuff.
Me too. Yeah, I'm so pleased to know that you share that, and you've had a deep dive into that world as well. You get it.
Yeah. Cool. What a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Same here. Thank you so much for the great questions.
Tell you what. Bye.
See you soon. Bye.
Hey, this is Steve Balton, and you have been tuned into My Turning Point with special guest Josh Groban. Thanks so much.
And the first time ever I lived with you, I felt your
When it comes to LASIK, Dr. Boutros and the Eye Center have led the way for the past 25 years. Today, this tradition continues by being one of the few practices in the country to offer you iDesign 2.0, using the same technology as the NASA James Webb Telescope. And in the hands of an elite surgeon like Dr. Boutros, more patients are seeing 20/20 or better after LASIK. Right now, enjoy 20% off eye LASIK with iDesign. Go to theeyecenter.com or call 888-844-2020. Some restrictions apply.
Sometimes you need to take control to make a difference. That's why with FlexPath from Capella University, you're in control. Set your own deadlines and leverage your experience to move at a pace that works for you. Discover a different way forward at capella.edu.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.